Hello, I'm Beth Kesselman, and this is Smashing the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring and a St. Stephen's Community House production. Thanks for joining us. St. Stephen's Community House acknowledges that our locations are situated upon traditional territories of the Wendat, Anishinaabeg Nation, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations, and the Métis Nation. The treaty that was signed for this particular parcel of land is collectively referred to as the Toronto Purchase and applies to lands east of Brown's Line to Woodbine Avenue and north towards Newmarket. St. Stephen's Community House is a guest, and we recognize the enduring presence of the Indigenous peoples on this land. Welcome back to another episode of Smash the Ceiling, a podcast on social hiring. Before we begin, don't forget to connect with us on social media. We're at Peer Pathways TO for Instagram and Twitter. Last time, we spoke with Lambrina Nicolau and Patricia Elkerton of West Neighborhood House and discussed peer work in a community services setting and the value that peer work can have in an organization and for an individual. While having made huge strides, peer work is still an area which is fighting to be fully recognized in the human resources, employment, healthcare, and even greater community services sectors. And so, in this episode, we're going to continue on with our discussion of peer work because a lot goes on before someone becomes a peer worker. And most people don't know what that may entail or understand the importance that peer training can have, not just for employment, but also for an individual's well-being, for building communities, and even for our healthcare system. Thankfully, this is an area which we can address, because Nadia Wally from the Peer Program at St. Stephen's is very well-versed in this topic, and she'll be shedding some light on all of these areas. It was a pleasure to speak with her, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. So my name is Nadia Wally, and I am the Peer Training and Development Program Coordinator at St. Stephen's Community House. Essentially, the Peer Program Coordinator. So the Peer Program is a 10-week training program that includes a placement component where participants can get paid to go out into the community and support people dealing with substance-related issues. So the 10 weeks of training are twice a week for 2 hours. There is an honoraria associated with the training, and all trainings are from harm reduction focus, and the ideas behind the training are to be able to provide people with the skills and information to then be able to go and support people in the community. So the program is specifically for people with lived experiences of substance-related issues. That's really the only qualification criteria.
And how do people find out about the program?
So due to funding constraints, we are limited. It's not open to the entire community. It's open to clients of TCAT, members of the Coroner Drop-In, and people who are housed in the Addiction Supportive Housing stream of the Access Point Housing application, which is complicated because that application has 3 different streams.
So what's TCAT?
So TCAT is the Toronto Community Addiction Team. Originally, TCAT started as a mobile case management program, offering long-term case management to individuals who are frequent users of withdrawal management services and emergency rooms.
It sounds like a really cool project. It sounds like a really great program. How long has it been running?
I think we're on year four.
Okay.
And we do 3 cycles a year. And we do up to 12 people per cycle. So we do about up to 36, we train up to 36 peers a year.
So I ask you a history question. How did this project come about?
To be honest, my understanding is that there was just a call for funding, and we submitted and we got it. We are one of the only core funded peer programs in the city though.
Why is that important?
It's important because we know that we can consistently offer the program to people and not have to worry about an end date. You know, it means that the community can get to know our program and know that it's a reliable, continuous program. Whereas with other agencies, peer programs are often very time sensitive, which also means that they're serving less individuals. And because we're a consistent program, we can end up serving a huge amount of the community.
I think that you're touching on a really kind of important component of nonprofit life,
mm-hmm.
Which is just funding. funding can be hard to attain, and oftentimes when we're talking about funding, we don't look at what that really means for like the participants in the programming.
Right.
And so the fact that this is core funding and it's stable, and you're not constantly, you know, warning people, oh, you know, you only have a month left.
Right.
Like, that has to have a big impact on your
business. I mean, it is a short-term program. It's because we're not considered an employment program. We are a training and development program.
Yeah.
So there is an end point to everybody in the program. However, you know, the question of funding does impact our program as well, because, so for example, we had the Peer Pathways program, which was a really great second step for people once they've completed the TCAP peer program, because the Peer Pathways program provided training, but also the opportunity to get a work placement that was a minimum of 20 hours per week. So for those folks that participated in the TCAP peer program that were ready for longer term employment and were ready to make a bigger commitment in terms of the number of hours that they're committing per week, it was a great like second step for people. And you know, when we talk about funding, you know, the funding for that program has ended now, which means that a lot of the participants of the TCAP peer program are going to be stuck when their time with the TCAP peer program finishes. So, I mean, it's challenging, and you know, we're hoping that the funding for that program comes back, but it's been easier to move people through the TCAP peer program because there was something else similar after.
Yeah, there was a natural next step.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so for folks who really wanted to move towards employment, that would have really helped them on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not everybody who participates in the TCAP peer program is looking for employment. For some people, you know, there's a huge therapeutic value to the program where, you know, for some people, just having something to commit to 3 times a week means so much to them. To feel like they belong to a community means a lot to them. To be able to connect with people means a lot to them. And, you know, we are a harm reduction based program, so we don't require abstinence to participate in the program, but you'll often see that once people start to feel better about themselves, there's natural changes in their substance use. And so, you know, without even realizing it, this person is now using less than they were before because they want to make sure that they're able to attend the program. They're changing their substances from, you know, higher risk substances or higher risk routes of ingestion to safer ways of using so that they can be present for the group because it means a lot to them.
And like, so you're really building a community.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our peers, you know, even after the training, you know, it's really nice to see the peers connect with each other outside of the program. So a lot of them, you know, we've been doing this for 3 years, and there's people who've, you know, developed friendships now for 2 or 3 years that are 2 or 3 years long, you know, and it's the first time in such a long time that they've been able to establish those types of positive relationships with other people.
And because the folks that are in the program are coming from like a really vulnerable place, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you're looking at someone coming into the program, can you give me like an example of what someone's life experience might be at that point, like why they'd be interested in this program and what the value is, like why would this be a step that they want to take?
Mm-hmm. So there's many different reasons as to why people want to participate in the program. Some people use it as a stepping stone to employment just because they haven't been employed for such a long period of time that they have a huge gap in their resume, and this allows them to put something recent on. There's other people who come just for the social aspect of it. They might be very isolated. You know, they might not be very connected to the community, and they just want to have some sort of connection with people. Just to be around other humans is a lot for them. And so that's the reason why they come. There are some people who just come for the honoraria, you know, but it's interesting to see, you know, people will often say later on throughout the program, you know, that, you know, I was just coming for the $20, but this has turned out to be so much more for me, you know. And so if you're coming for the $20, cool, you know, like, we'll take you, we will treat you the same way that we will treat everybody else. And, you know, by the end of the 10 weeks, you might have a completely different view as to what you would like to do, right? If you're coming to socialize with people, great, you know. Be around people, do what you need to do. And if you're coming for to as a stepping stone to employment, then wonderful. But it's also really interesting to see how the people who are in different stages interact with each other, right? Because you have some people who've been abstinent for over a year. You have some people who are coming to the training semi under the influence because they're still using and they're still working through their stuff. And then you have some people who, you know, cannot use for 2 or 3 days and then they'll use for 2 or 3 days. And so you have people who are in different stages of their life and in different places in life, but they all find a way to come together and support each other and build a community, which is really amazing to see.
One, that sounds amazing. Like, that sounds like it's having, like, just for regardless of the reason, no matter what the motivation is, people are walking out in a better place than where they were before.
Absolutely, yeah. Right?
And so when you're looking at sort of some of the outcomes that you've seen, you know, I'm using the word outcome because I'm coming from an employment background, mm-hmm. but like when you're looking at the positive impacts of that this peer program is having mm-hmm. on folks, like can you tell me a couple of stories of folks?
You know, regardless of where the person is at when they start the program, most people come from very similar places, right? So even if someone, when they start the program, may have been abstinent for a year and maybe stable in most parts of their life, they have the experience of, you know, struggling with substance-related issues, having issues with problematic substance use. And so it's really, I'm going to say it's a great thing, but the really great thing is that, you know, all of the participants have that in common, right? They have the fact that they struggled with substance-related issues. So, you know, some of the successes that I've seen are, you know, you have a St. Stephen's member who, you know, most times when you see them, they're really struggling. They're having a hard time managing their money. They're, you know, getting into conflicts with people. And, you know, and then they come to the group and, you know, attendance means so much to them. Being around people means so much to them. Being part of the community means so much to them that you see their behaviors change in other areas. So, for example, if they're in the drop-in, you know, they're taking this position seriously and they're seeing themselves as a representative of St. Stephen's. And so something that normally would have caused a behavioral issue is now not, because they want to represent St. Stephen's and themselves as a participant of St. Stephen's in a positive light. Then we have other people who have really been able to make significant changes around their substance use. You know, they went from using every day to, you know, if they're here 3 days a week, they're only using 4 days a week as opposed to using every day. So they've been able to make significant changes around their substance use, which is also a really great thing.
Which impacts their health a lot too.
Absolutely. They're having less admissions to hospital. They're having less admissions to withdrawal management services. Their overall health is better. They're able to make their appointments to doctors, to court, to all of that kind of stuff, which then, you know, impacts other aspects of their life, right? So, you know, now their legal issues are being taken care of because they're not being breached for not showing up. Their, you know, general health is being taken care of because we have groups on Wednesdays and the doctor happens to be at our clinic on Wednesday afternoon. So after the group, they stick around and they see the doctor. So now they're on their medications, they're having other health issues looked at, and so they're just physically feeling better.
Yeah.
Then emotionally they're feeling better because they're around people and they're getting support from people who know what it's like to have been through what they're going through. So it changes a person dramatically, right? Regardless of whether it's employment or just being part of a community. But then we have other peers who are employment ready. And I think the first person in one of the, I think it was the second group that we had, so about 2 years ago, there was one person who was a TCAT client. So by definition would mean someone who had multiple admissions to WMS or hospital. And, he, as part of his placement hours, was doing some hours at a managed alcohol program that we are part of. And he excelled there, and it was a new program, and a position came up, and they gave him the opportunity to apply for the position. He got the position. He's been really successful there. He was able to get off of ODSP. He is a union rep with the agency. He now has moved on from that position to a case management position within the agency, which was his goal position. That's the type of position he wanted. And he was able to get that through connecting to the peer program. And then we also have two other peers who came in. Neither of them were really kind of sure what to expect from the program. They were kind of like, yeah, I'll do my 10 weeks, it'll give me something to do. And now both of them are on contracts employed at St. Stephen's, which is also really great.
Those are some amazing outcomes. huge changes from being from going to emergency and using heavily social services to then helping others.
Absolutely.
Being fully employed. Yeah. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really great to see.
Yeah. I think it really does show like the value of the work that you do and the value of the programming.
Well, it's the work they do. It's not the work I do. They do the work. I kind of just set it up for them.
Well said. Mental health and addictions are often very interlinked. Mm-hmm. This is an example of a different way to look at access to employment for people who are living with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a different way of looking at access to employment, but it's also a different way of looking at treatment. Yeah. Right? So for people who use substances, you know, your residential treatment abstinence-based programs don't work for everybody. Like, they work for some people, and for those that it works for, that's great. But it doesn't work for everybody. And I think, you know, these types of programs also have a huge therapeutic value. So it's not like the employment outcomes for people are great, that, you know, some people have been able to get full-time employment, have been able to come off of social services, stop using, you know, hospital or WMS and all of that. But I think it's the treatment outcomes, right, the therapeutic outcomes are just as great, you know. So some people have gone from actively using at the beginning of the group to being abstinent by the end of their time with the peer program, right? So there's also that component to it as well, which is equally as great as obtaining employment. Everybody deserves an opportunity, right? And regardless of where people are at in life, you know, their behaviors are not a reflection of who they are as a person. And most of the people that we work with are genuinely really, really amazing, caring, empathetic, committed people. It's life circumstances that make those characters hard to come out at times. But under it all, they are wonderful, great human beings. The other thing I'd like to say is that lived experience is real experience. And, you know, for people who might not have like the academic qualifications, I personally believe that, you know, if someone wants to work in social services, lived experience is actually equivalent to, if not more valuable than the academic part of qualifications.
When we're looking at job descriptions, you look at them and the job description is like a barrier, right? Because somebody with, like, a lot of times, at least, you know, when I'm speaking with folks, you know, people who have a lot of lived experience, often education, there's a lot of barriers between them and attaining education.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so when you look at the job description itself is a barrier to employment, even though they've got a lot of great experience
yep.
and a lot of insights
yep.
into the community services, mm-hmm. right? So what do you think as somebody who's seen this, you know, watched employment, help people find employment along these lines, like, what would you say would be a way to navigate that, both from a person with lived experience, and what could an employer do to try and, you know, bridge that gap?
Well, I think lived experience should allow the opportunity for an interview, right? And I think what employers can do to help bridge that gap, I mean, I know that money is always an issue for things, but if someone with lived experience does well in their interview, I think they should be given the opportunity to do the job, and as an employer, help support that person in obtaining the academic qualifications, but not expecting the academic qualifications up front. So that would be one way to reduce the barrier, but also to see lived experience as real experience and as a qualification. So yes, some people might have degrees, masters, whatever, and that's a great qualification to have, but to also see lived experience as a qualification.
And to reflect that on their job description, so they're not accidentally deterring
absolutely
candidates,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Or some people, you know, like, they might be able to take courses, or they might be able to do workshops or certain trainings as opposed to, like, a full degree or diploma, but to also consider, you know, the fact that this person obviously has an interest in learning, but there may be several reasons as to why they can't, why they can't complete a diploma or a degree, whether it's finances, whether it's family stuff, whether it's, you know, lack of housing or whatever, right? Like, there are many reasons as to why people are unable to complete the academic qualifications, and to, like, look into that, right? And is it the person just not willing to, or are they not able to? Because those are two different things, right? And if they're not able to, then see what you can do to support that person in getting those qualifications, but still giving them the opportunity to do the job in the meantime.
And that's challenging for a lot of human resource folks, because
I get it.
It goes against the grain of traditional human resource philosophy, which is, you know, you find the most qualified candidate with every single postnomial you can find that you can get for the dollar amount that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so this requires you to have an open mind and to really look at it from a community perspective, and to adopt a different philosophy.
Yeah,
which, when we're looking at the sector, is something that works with the general philosophies of the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. And social services is all about dealing with people on a human level. Right, that's what it is. Social services are about relationships. You do the work well when you can establish relationships with the folks that you're serving. Who better to do that than someone who's been in the position of the folks that you're serving, right? So when I go out to meet people, oftentimes, like, yes, I have really great relationships with the people that I serve, but oftentimes when they're struggling, they're like, you don't know what I'm going through. Like, you can't, don't pretend like you know what I'm going through. You can't support me because you don't know. Now, when a peer worker goes out there and is able to say, like, yeah, I know how you're feeling. Like, you must feel like crap right now. Like, this is what helped for me. Maybe we can try that with you. They're going to be open to that because they know that this is something that this person has tried themselves and has worked. Whereas if I say, maybe you should try this, they're going to be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Which, they're right. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's maybe something I've learned from someone else that I've worked with or supported that's worked for them. But I don't know what they're talking about.
Okay. Or some statistical thing that you may know because you do research, or,
sure,
right? But then that separates you, right? Because, you know, this works for people, you know, statistically
this works
speaking.
For 87% of the people, so you might fall within that 87%, you know?
Yeah, but that just others you, right?
Absolutely.
When you do that.
Absolutely.
And that's going to change the outcomes, right? Having somebody talk to your participant and having the participant be receptive to that advice will impact positive outcomes for your organization, which will translate into dollars eventually, right?
People who are struggling are more, in my observation and experience, are more open to connecting with people who have been through similar situations.
So I really appreciate you coming on and talking about some of your experiences and some of the impacts that peer work and peer education have on the participants of your programming, organizations for in hiring, and looking at long-term impacts as well. So thank you so much.
Not a problem.
Peer engagement. engagement, training, and employment have multifaceted and complex impacts which are often not discussed widely. So a huge thanks to Nadia for joining us and talking about the impressive successes that can be had in these areas. As you may have gleaned from Nadia and I's conversation, the Peer Pathways project is sadly coming to a close. And so we hope you join us next time for what may be our final episode. Lastly, don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter. And thanks again for listening. St. Stephen's Community House would like to thank United Way, as well as the Ministry of Advanced Education and Skills Development and Employment Ontario, for their continued support with this project. We would also like to acknowledge Monk Turner for allowing us to use Judicious Jude for our music, as well as Satunium for the percussive loop.